Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. It's Brian Hayes, Dave Festruck of the Toronto Star. Beautiful afternoon, rolling into a long weekend. I have to believe the highways are packed. People are getting out of town. And if you're in town, you're looking to have a good time, as you should be. And you got the Jays at home and Joey Votto returning home, Toronto's own. He'll be in the lineup. He's been activated, and he's back, and he'll be playing tonight for Cincinnati. So we look forward to that. Jamal McGlure is coming up later this hour. We got Dave Poulin will join us here in about 5 minutes to look back on heartbreaking Florida last night. Colorado finally got punched in the face, right? St. Louis gave him a punch last night.
Yep.
Let's see how they respond. And night two of the Battle of Alberta tonight. So we'll start looking ahead to that with Poulin. And I referenced a couple of your articles this week, Dave, where you've been tracking this team for a long time, the Leafs, and you know, you wrote a really interesting piece about the quick turnaround and the quick response and Shanahan, Dubas, et cetera, effectively saying we're going to run it back. Now, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, we'll see exactly what that means, what the team actually looks like come opening night. But by all accounts, Shanahan, Dubas, Keefe, and the big guys are more than likely going to return next year for the Leafs. And the checks and balances around that organization. You know, you referenced Tim Leiwicki in your article. What would happen if Tim Leiwicki was still here?
Yeah.
What would the tone be? But there's an outgoing president and CEO. There isn't anyone that's come in yet. I don't know what that means for checks and balances around the Maple Leafs, and I guess that would apply to the Raptors as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I just, you know, you look back on that Tim Leiwicki era, Hayes, and I can tell you this, you know, six straight first-round exits does not go over well in the Tim Leiwicki mentality. Because the words that still resonate with me talking to that guy when he first arrived, it was amazing, because all the stuff that doofuses like me and guys like you on the radio had been saying was, you know, this franchise doesn't care about anything but profit. Winning isn't the organizational, you know, goal, right? They win when they fill the building. They win when they stack money on top of money on top of money. And Leiwicki was the guy that came in. Hey, he's the first guy, really, that came in here and said, we cannot tolerate losing. Like, we have to set the goal of winning championships, not playoff rounds, championships. And, of course, his great disciple and protege, Masai Ujiri, took that to heart and swung big and won one. And I just haven't seen the same type of mentality on the Leafs side.
No, it was there when Shanahan first got here. You know, there was a real bloodletting among the organization. Like, there was a huge turnover, and there was lip service towards getting it right, quote unquote, which I think they put in motion, and I think they did. You know, they bottomed out the way, they turned things over, and in comes Matthews and Marner and Nylander, et cetera, and even Babcock coming here, Lamoriello coming here. It really changed almost on a dime. Like, it took a year or two, but it got there with Shanahan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that they don't have a very good team. They do have a good team. I think they're a likable team in terms of their personalities, in terms of the way they represent the shield and the city. You know, they're not a bunch of idiots doing a bunch of dumb things that make you kind of turn your back on the franchise or feel.
No, there's no salute gate.
It's none of that kind of stupidity. Like, they've really – I was having this conversation this morning. Like, they really are playoff victories away from, I think, reestablishing – original six, Toronto Maple Leaf greatness, like what they should look and sound and feel like.
Yeah.
The problem is they can't achieve that. And everything else you can control. You can control your culture. You can control who you draft, who you sign, who you hire, the mandates, the rules, the regulations, the way you police it. What you can't control is when the puck drops, what the other team is going to allow you to do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, once the puck drops, the other team's allowed to try to win too. And for 6 years, if not 18 years, the other teams have said, sorry, you're not going to be able to establish what you really want to establish.
Exactly.
And
yeah, so true.
Ultimately, that's what stings the most, you know, is, you want to be proud of the group. You want to like the players, the coaches, the way they operate. But you got to win to really complete the mission. And the fact of the matter is they're not even close to that because they can't get out of the first round.
No, that's just it. Like, we're not talking about a team that's nearly missing, you know, and we've heard that narrative from other teams. Like this Lightning team, before it got through and won a cup, you know, they'd been to a final in 2015, and they'd lost. They'd had the heartbreak of losing in the first round, getting swept in the first round by Columbus. They'd missed the playoffs altogether in there. So, but the point about that is, you know, they hadn't stumbled at the first hurdle every time like this Maple Leafs team is. Like, you have to go, like, there isn't a team that has stumbled at the first hurdle in winner-take-all games like the Maple Leafs have. 5 straight years, we had that stat, which was incredible, that never in the history of the NHL, NBA, and Major League Baseball has anybody lost 5 straight winner-take-all games in the first round. But to me, it's what Shanahan said at near the end of that press conference that had to be the most alarming thing, Hayes. If I'm in management, upper management, if I'm above Shanahan's pay grade, because he said we're still looking for that killer instinct.
Right.
And that's the same thing they were looking for last year when they got, you know, embarrassed and humiliated by the Montreal Canadiens. And that tells me they don't know where to find it.
Well, and maybe Pooley knows the answer to it. Pooley went to 3 Stanley Cup finals. You know, Pooley had the killer instinct. He played on with killer instinct. Here's our TSN hockey analyst, Dave Poulin, joining us here in the Maple Toyota Hotline. I'm sure there's a lot of teams out there that pose that question internally, Pooley. How do you find killer instinct? Like, are you born with it? Can you develop it? Where do you find killer instinct?
Well, here's the teaser, gentlemen. You're going to have to read my column on Sunday.
All right.
Look at you guys with the Toronto Star. Okay.
I started Wednesday, actually, which is early for me to start a weekend thought process for a column. Mm-hmm. And normally I vet it with the editor on, you know, early Friday. And I went to him Wednesday and I said, I'd like to try and tackle killer instinct, because we've been talking about it so much and thinking about it so much. And the way I did it, it's not finite the way I did it, but I went back and really scanned through my hockey career, starting when I was young, to try and figure out exactly what you're asking, Brian. Like, why did I have it? And I actually asked a couple of former teammates, like, before I started, right? I got to verify. Like, hey, guys, I had this, right? Like, I'm not kidding myself. And they laughed.
Right.
They said, yeah, you had it. Yeah, including a guy I slashed numerous times, apparently. He said, yeah, you had it for sure.
Yeah.
and so I drilled down and I looked back and I picked out 6 different people and or places that I feel were significant in adding to my killer instinct. And it went back to a kid I played with when I was really young. And he was a huge contributor to it in a different way. So it's not something that you can't go to the store and buy it on a shelf. You can't order it on Amazon. And I don't think you can bring one guy into a locker room and say, okay, we have it now. That's not the way it works. And I think it's a combination of, I think a lot of the guys on the team, Brian, have it in various, I guess, layers, but it doesn't come out at the right time. And why is that? And maybe it's a circumstance they haven't been on. Some of them have way more than they think they do. Some of them learned it from people that and they haven't applied it yet, and it is there. And some of it may be from watching, you know what, somebody may 2 years from now say, well, I picked that up from Mark Giordano when he was here, you know, at the end of that tail end, if that's all they were here for. So it's not something that is as concrete as he's got a good shot or he's a good back checker or he's a good penalty killer. But I really believe it's a real thing, guys. I really do. And, you know, I had a long chat with one of my former teammates today about it and who had it in spades. And, you know, we were talking about other guys on the team. And so then when you brought someone in, they kind of observed what was going on and they were just assimilated to it. Like, I'll tell you a kid that I think has it. And this may surprise you or it may not. I think Ross Colton has it.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah.
Sure does.
Okay, so let's look at his background. He's from, you know, a town in New Jersey. He played in the USHL for 2 years with Cedar Rapids. He played at Vermont for Kevin Snedden for 2 years. He played 2 years in Syracuse. And then you could see it coming last year. You know, part of it is an experience. Well, he scored the winning goal in the Stanley Cup game, you know? And now he's got five goals. He scores big goals. He scores them at big times. He expects to score them. And just when you see him score a goal, you're like, damn, where did that come from? And so you come into a team with Stammer and with and Kucherov has it in spades.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he just loves to put that dagger in. And his laissez-faire attitude, you know, when he's passing the puck and you're like, because he can look so casual, it would drive a coach crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of a casual killer instinct. Like, he's smiling when he's doing it. And so it's a fascinating point. It's an intangible in sport that is enormous. And I believe a lot of guys on the Leafs have it. It doesn't come up at the right time.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I guess that's the question, right? You look at Hayes and I were talking about, you look at the Lightning stats, especially at 5-on-5, and it's, you know, as much as, you know, Kucherov's the heart of that team and points hurt right now, but so many of these guys that are, you'd consider depth pieces, like the Ross Coltons of the world and Nick Paul, who burned the Leafs in the biggest moment of their season. And on down that list to Corey Perry, who, you know, is a depth piece that was available on the free agent market to anybody. My question to you is, David, do these guys become central figures in the Stanley Cup playoffs because they're on the Lightning, or could they become that for anybody? Could they have become that for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Is it the core that creates those guys, or is it those guys who add to the core?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's literally the chicken and the egg, but I think the core is what gives them the confidence and the ability and the environment and the place setting to do it. Because let's face it, Nick Paul goes in and he is on the fourth line, and then Braden Point gets hurt and he gets elevated, but he answers. And, you know, Nick Paul answered at the World Championships last year, and he's coming from an Ottawa team that didn't win many hockey games. And in some ways he struggled to find a place there. But you know, you look at that team and this is something that is interesting with the Leafs because of the way they're built, they don't get long-term residents in the second tier category because they either right price themselves or they just replace them.
Right.
And so they don't get Alex Killorn, who's been there since 2007, while he's draft pick in 2007. And then when you start in 2008, every single year, there's at least one or two additions. Other than the draft, they missed on Drouin, but they brought Sergachev in from the same draft in the trade. Mm-hmm. And every year you're adding. So those components have been together so long. Like, Andre Palat has been forever there. Just forever.
Yeah.
But he's been with Killorn. And so they get put in these situations, and they're so comfortable in them. And, you know, and then when they go out and pick up a guy, they pick up the captain of the New York Rangers. Not just a New York Ranger, but the captain of the New York Rangers. In Ryan McDonagh. And, you know, and now he's been there 5 or maybe 6 years. And so I think it's that long-term build of the support group that really contributes to that, Dave, that the environment that says, when you come in here, you know, we've been together a long time and here's what we do. And yeah, we went through some tough times, but we figured it out. And in those tough times, they won playoff rounds and, you know, they went deep in the playoffs. They just didn't win the cup.
Right.
So I think it's a combination of that long-term base and the fact, you know, they've got, on a normal night, they've got, 11 draft picks in their lineup. And they just have that little pipeline going. And they're not all-star draft picks. Some of them are lower down, like a Ross Colton. But when he comes in, he grows with it, and he gets it. And they don't even own their American League team. That's an independently owned team. Howard Dolgan owns that team in Syracuse. So, you know, they figured out a way to do it and do it in a very effective manner.
Yeah, they sure have. We're Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst. So we've got game two of the Battle of Alberta tonight. I just saw Haley Salvian tweet out sarcastically, just under 6 hours until puck drop in Calgary. Because even out there, they're complaining, and it's going to be about an 8:40 local time. It's 10:40 Eastern time. And, like, this is, you know, you got two games going in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight, and I understand there's an NBA game, and I think that's the issue, is that ESPN and TNT, they own the rights to both. I'll guarantee you, if it was NBC that still had the rights, this game would start at a different time tonight. But you got the Battle of Alberta. You've got Connor McDavid, the face of your league, starting a playoff game at 10:40 Eastern time. Like, how can the league possibly explain this?
Yeah, well, they can't and they shouldn't have to explain it because it shouldn't happen. It just
right.
shouldn't. There's only two games tonight. You know, even if you played it off and said, okay, you know, I mean, you've got to adjust them and move them, you do. And I will say that, you know, this is an age-old argument, and I can share with you that I played 930 starts my first, I believe, 2 years in the NHL on the road in Madison Square Garden because the circus was on in the matinee.
Wow.
930 starts on right. ice where you had a circus in the afternoon.
That's crazy.
And it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And you'd say, well, that's not that big a deal for the players. It is a big deal for the players. And an 850 start is, it's too late. It just is. It's out of the routine. It's out of everything. And you're right. I still think it's going to be a great series. It's going to be a fully entertaining series. However it plays out, we could get a 1-0 game tonight, but it should be, you know, I mean, if anything, on a holiday Friday, start it earlier, Brian.
No kidding.
You know, you'd have a 4 o'clock crowd today, wouldn't you, in the bar?
Yeah, you would. You're right. It's absolutely a holiday. And if it's the Battle of Alberta, it's a holiday anyway. You know, no one's going to work.
Absolutely.
You can start that
absolutely.
Game at any point. For sure.
No,
it's so
question.
Disappointing. It is disappointing. And do you expect – I'm not sure what to expect out of either team tonight, considering what Game 1 was. But I guess it's necessary. The Oilers have a response. Clearly, they have to clean up their defensive play. Mike Smith has to be a lot better. But – What are the Oilers thinking here tonight? How do we analyze Game 1 and apply some sort of logic from that into what we can expect out of them in Game 2?
Well, they need more from their depth. I mean, Connor McDavid was tremendous in Game 1, but they need more, and they need more physical play, guys. And, you know, I mean, Zach Cassian can't surface at the end of the game, and he just can't. Connor McDavid can't lead the team in hits. You know, as majestic as that is and how cool it is, he can't. He just can't. And so they've got to go further down. Now, Hyman had a couple of goals for them, but he's a top-line player. They have to get, I think, more physical play, and they have to get on this Calgary defense. And the Calgary defense, I think, is vulnerable, but you've got to get to them fast. And it's interesting when you get a pair of guys like Zadorov and Gudbranson. And Gudbranson is just – and he looks great out there. And that's your third pairing of the big and the physical, but you've got to get on them and you've got to make them play in their end. And I think that's the biggest thing. But what we're seeing out of Calgary doesn't surprise me. I think they're one of the top four or five built teams in terms of the way they're constructed from top to bottom. And, you know, Darryl isn't even that worried about matching up with McDavid. Now, I say that respectfully. The way he's worried about it is you better know when he's on the ice, guys. But he trusts his four centermen. And in his four centermen, I mean, Michael Backlund's a good defensive center, but so is Cale Yarncroft. And so is Trevor Lewis, you know, with his couple of Stanley Cups. And so he doesn't feel the need to play his Selke Trophy candidate, Elias Lindholm. And well, then what that automatically does, guys, is when you're not out there with McDavid, think of the freedom you feel. Like,
yeah.
You know, you're Michael Backlund out there with Coleman and Mangiapane, and you're going, ah, this is great. We don't have McDavid this shift. And when you do get him, you take full responsibility and you don't stop him, but you maybe slow him down a little bit. But I was looking for matchups early. I don't think we're going to see them just because of the way Calgary's built.
Well, Dave, getting back to the Leafs, and you've obviously been on the Leafs executive team in your career, so you know a little bit about the inner workings of the corporate monstrosity that is Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. But, you know, we were just talking, Hayes and I, about – you know, the dynamics of that organization right now. And basically, Brendan Shanahan's had 8 years to run this hockey operation, essentially left on his own. Very little oversight, very little questioning from my understanding, because he had a CEO who really wasn't a sports guy after Tim Lawicki left in 2015. And in ownership, as you know, there is a three-headed animal, you know, with various interests, none of which seem to be to nitpick the hockey team. But at what point, Dave, do you think, you know, this organization could use maybe a little bit of an injection of that Lawicki kind of, we cannot tolerate losing again and again and again. We can't just leave this hockey department on its own. Someone's got to say something here. How do you see it, Dave?
Well, it's interesting because what Brendan Shanahan did is quieted all the outside talk immediately.
Yeah,
we don't know what's what the dialogue is inside, Dave. You know, in fairness, I mean, he might have walked out of that and went right to Kyle Dubas and said, this isn't good enough. This is flat out not good enough.
Yeah.
And that very well could be the case. And if that's the case and that's happening behind doors, and I fully expect it would be, I really do, Brendan Shanahan has to know they have to get better. It's not, you don't come back the next year and have everybody just be better. That it's not the way it works. And I know they had 8 or 9 guys have career years. Well, you don't have career year every year.
Yeah.
And so you would expect some regression there.
Don't stay healthy every year.
You don't stay healthy every year. And the biggest thing is they can't walk this team back next year, not even close, because they're going to lose a number of components to the salary cap. It's just pure numbers. It's not anything. But, I mean, right away, Morgan Riley costs you $2.5 million more. You know, without saying another word. And yeah. So, you know, now you're going to, and your goal is going to cost you, your starting goal is going to cost you more than $1.65 million next year. How's that?
No
doubt.
Whatever
that number is. And so immediately you're looking at what you can bring back, and their pro scouting staff has really done an unbelievable job, I think, of adding pieces. You know, from a couple of teams, you know, you look at David Camp in Chicago. That was a great pickup. He had one goal last year, guys.
Yeah.
And Ilya Labushkin, like, you're scouting a really bad team in Arizona, and you're figuring out that one of their D can really help a really good team. That's a real credit to the pro scouts. And they've done a good job with that. But once again, now we're talking about changing out a number of guys each year again. But I think that the statement that was made to the media about we are status quo, we believe in this group, is not the exact same conversation that's gone on behind closed doors, Dave. I just don't. I can't imagine that it is. Because they know, you know, the other factor is you're going to have to factor in the next couple of years, and Detroit's going to be better. Buffalo's going to be better. Ottawa's going to be better. And that's just the cycle they're in that ensures that. That's not just that they're bringing the same teams back next year, but they're in growth curves and they're going to press. And I think the East is going to get, you know, this division is going to get more challenging. I think Montreal will be better than they were. They're not going to be as bad as they were last year, but all of a sudden now you've got more competition within. And I do think that they will make some changes this summer that we don't expect right now. I really do. I think there'll be some significant change.
Yeah. And, you know, we didn't get to it yesterday. We were doing so many different things, but we referenced Cam Neely's end of season presser. And that was a very different tone from Brendan Shanahan's end of season presser. Meanwhile, the way they played the game was very similar. And I think they both can run hot, and you know Cam Neely as well as anyone, Dave. But he was very blunt in not necessarily saying, hey, like flying off the handle. It was, we need to get to the inside of the ice better. We need better depth. We need to, like, there were a lot of different things where basically his tone was, I'm not satisfied with losing in 7. You know, like, we're Boston. That's not how we roll. And we are going to attack the problems. And it really, when you juxtaposed with what Shanahan and company had to say, it was very different, Pooley. Very different approach.
Very different. Now, that's my old landlord you're talking about.
Yes, that's right.
I lived with him when I was in Boston. Very straightforward, very blunt. And Brian, I'm not sure that these same exact questions weren't asked by Brendan Shanahan behind closed doors or the same statements made. They would have to be because they didn't win a round.
Right.
And I'm sure they were. But Cam chose to do it in an incredibly public forum with a coach who has done a very good job. And, you know, I think Bruce Cassidy's done a really good job coaching that team with what they went through this year. You know, and they lost some key pieces. And over the last couple of years, they've lost some key pieces. And the compete level of the president was very evident there. And I'm sure it's the same way here, but I think one said it, you know, out in the open, and my guess is one said it behind closed doors. But now you ask those questions to each other on your best of days. You know, when you talk about in the C-suite, Dave, you constantly ask each other those questions, and it's constantly, I mean, you want people around you that challenge you, and, you know, and and ask you those questions. That's what you do. That's why they're there. And so they're asking each other those questions. They're just not doing it at the dais, you know, on team exit day.
Yep. And ultimately, what you say on days like that in front of a microphone don't necessarily matter that much. You know, what's going to really matter is how you build your team and what you do during the off season. So we'll see. We got a couple of games tonight, a late one tonight, Pooley, but we're all going to be up watching. It's going to be fun. You guys will have coverage, of course, tonight on SportsCenter. So enjoy that, and we'll do it again soon. Happy long weekend. Thank you, Pooley.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the hockey.
You got it. You too. There's Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's red tag days. Visit MapleToyota.com. So Noodles has been adamant all week something significant will happen with the Leafs. Pooley basically said he thinks things are going to happen. We'll find out, I guess.
Hey, I'll tell you what. You know, to me, if they want to keep the president, the GM, and the coach employed, they're going to have to do something significant because you can't go in, like, they're going to have to go in front of the board here. Shanahan's going to have to go in front of Larry Tannenbaum and the representatives of the other ownership, and they're going to have to outline a plan here. Mm-hmm. And if it's everybody's keeping the job and we're keeping it all the same and we're running it back, you know they're going to get laughed out of that room, even though I think sometimes that room isn't particularly forceful in the way it deals with the hockey operation.
Right. I don't think it's nasty, but –
You can't. That can't be your plan.
No, it can't, there's no way it can't be the plan. And ultimately, you know, what ends up happening here, the reaction of doing a show like this, a live show, is you know, we get a lot of feedback, a lot of interaction with fans of the shows. And when I sit there and say I think something has to happen, a significant move, I'll get a reaction, well, what do you think, they're going to blow it up and restart? No one's suggesting
that.
Like, no one's saying that you take a step back, you know, to take two steps forward. It's the train is moving. It's making an adjustment to one of the buses on the train. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, doesn't mean that you're still not a very good team. And the core of it is Matthews, Marner. They're not going anywhere, nor should they. And you're going to have a very good team. You've got a bunch of guys coming back who are going to be the makings of a good team. But this ingredient, or all of these ingredients thrown into this pot, have led to the same result every single year. So, you know, suggesting that you need to change something, that isn't drastic.
It's not.
That isn't bombastic, oh, crazy hot take guy in Toronto. Like, that's just reasonable following sports of any league, any team. You know? And we'll see. You know, we'll see what comes of it. And in reality, they can't really do anything for another 6 weeks or so anyway, you know, as the Stanley Cup playoffs continue. So, Pierre LeBrun will join us a little bit later this afternoon. Bobby Marks of ESPN in just over an hour. And Jamal McGlure coming up, Raptors assistant coach, also VP and senior advisor for the Scarborough Shooting Stars of the Canadian Elite Basketball League. They have someone coming up of significant name status. We'll tell you about that. We'll see how Jamal factors into it all. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN2. Buddy Jamal McGlure will join us here in just a moment. Raptors assistant coach, but he's also the VP and senior advisor for the Scarborough Shooting Stars of the Canadian Elite Basketball League. And that's a league that I think is getting international attention today, Dave, because rapper J. Cole, who's a good player, clearly, has signed a deal to come up here, and I guess, where is he staying? He's staying with Drake? Are he and Drake guys? Boys? Are they? I don't know. Is there a connection there or what?
That's a good question. Drake's got the room. I've been by his place. He's I think he's got a couple extra spots you could tuck in a sleeping bag.
I would think
that,
so.
In that monstrosity of a mansion of his.
Yeah, but I would think when J. Cole gets up here, he's probably not living like any of the other players on the team. I don't think, like, is he going to live in Scarborough? Is there a spot? We can find him somewhere in Scarborough, although housing prices are crazy in Toronto right now.
Yeah.
Maybe he needs Jamal McGlure to hook him up. Maybe he stays with Jamal. Let's bring him in here. Longtime NBAer and Raptors assistant coach, and now VP and senior advisor for the Scarborough Shooting Stars of the Canadian Elite Basketball League. Is that an option for J. Cole? Jamal, could he room with you, or what's the plan
here? He's welcome to my house anytime.
Okay. Okay, this is big news. I mean, obviously, we're all curious what this means. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with him as a player. Can J. Cole actually bring something to the table here? What does this mean for the team and the league?
Well, we're very, very excited to have him. We believe that he has a chance to play and contribute on this team. He is going to play, and he's just continuing to better himself as a basketball player, and we're here to help facilitate that.
Okay.
Makes sense. Hey, Jamal, now you've been a real player, an NBA All-Star, Jamal, and I wonder how do the real players, the guys who were actually trying to make a career in this game, look at a guy like this? Because I remember when Master P tried out for the Raptors. That was around your era. Another rapper who was just dabbling as a baller. How do you look at that as a real hardcore baller when these guys come in from their rap careers and try and make a name for themselves on the court?
Well, we always are trying to market our brand, market ourselves. We really believe that J. Cole is a basketball player. We respect what he does musically, but he's here for basketball. He wants to be around the guys. He doesn't want to be treated any different than anybody else. And we as an organization, we want to win.
Right.
So with that being said, it's a perfect marriage. He's been working extremely hard, and we look forward to our first home game next week, Thursday, in Guelph.
Yeah, so take us through the plan here. I mean, obviously this is a league that takes place when the Raptors aren't going. The Raptors could be going at this point. If that were the case, you would be preoccupied. You wouldn't be looking forward to that game necessarily in Guelph. But in terms of what, you know, it means for the Scarborough Shooting Stars, but ultimately the Canadian Elite Basketball League, you know, the status of the league, bringing in a name like J. Cole, someone with that level of recognition. You spoke about branding and the fact that it is a business. What kind of impact do you expect this to have in terms of people actually paying attention?
Well, I think the CEBL has done a great job in bringing themselves first, even before this year. This is not the first year in existence for the league, so I think that they've done a great job in bringing basketball players of star caliber in different positions. I know Patrick Ewing Jr. is coaching in Newfoundland, and Joel Anthony is the general manager of Montreal. I'm here in Toronto. So we're continuing to get better as a basketball league, as these teams. And I think once we do that, we're going to have a lot more people wanting to be a part of this on all different walks and fronts of life.
So, Jamal, we know J. Cole. He's a world-renowned, Grammy-winning artist in the hip-hop realm. Give us the scouting report of this guy as what he can do for the Scarborough Shooting Stars.
Well, from what I've seen, he has relentless energy. He's a good shooter, and he wants to improve. And I think even in the NBA at our level with the Raptors, these are the kind of players that we're looking for. We're looking for guys that have an upside, guys that want to work hard, and guys that can contribute defensively. And, knock down the shot when open. So he fits our criteria. Again, this is not a publicity stunt where he's here to play. And we're going to do the best job in putting him in a position to succeed so he can further improve his career, basketball career.
We're chatting with Jamal McGlure. I mean, since you've been with the Raptors, you know, your post-playing career and being affiliated with the team, obviously you saw the build-up, you saw the payoff in 19, and the past couple of years have been a bit of a different story. Last year in particular, because of COVID, because everyone was in Tampa, and by the end of it, you were kind of bottoming out. This year, you guys swung right back into a more positive direction. And I think the story of the year was kind of redemption for guys like Fred and Ananobi and Siakam and the arrival of a guy like Scotty Barnes. And being around Scotty daily and being aware of kind of where he is at and what kind of bar he is trying to set, what are reasonable expectations for growth in his game this summer, and what could we see out of Scotty Barnes come next year?
I think you could see Scotty Barnes playing and defending all five positions. He did a pretty good job defending the best player on the other team for most of the year. But that could improve. As we all know, he has a tremendous upside. And I think just being able to shoot the ball a little bit more consistently. Things that we can't teach is what he has, is the tenacity, the fearlessness, not being afraid to be fouled or hit. Now we just got to, tweak some of the other facets of his game, and he's already in the gym working extremely hard. We had a camp this week with some of our young players, and it went really well.
So you were a pure big, Jamal, like 6'11", 265. Like, you were in the paint, and that's where you did business. If you were out by the perimeter guarding someone, with all the respect, I'm sure your coach was like, this could be a bit of a concern. If you were looking to jack threes, I'm sure your coach was saying, what the hell's going on? Where is this game plan coming from? Mm-hmm. When you say what you just said, Scotty Barnes is a guy that could play and defend all five positions. Like, how did it get to this point? Because it wasn't long ago where that just was not even a part of the realm of possibility in the NBA. And now he's not alone. There's a lot of guys that are doing that. And it feels like your team, you're building towards almost having four or five guys on the court every single night where that is a possibility.
Absolutely. I think the game is continuing to evolve. The scores of games are getting higher and higher. And that's because the players are much more versatile. You got to be able to do many, many things in the NBA and do them well. And, he has a pretty good feel for that right now, but he's not complacent. He wants to continue to get better, and that's what we want of him as well. So it's going to be a big summer for him going into his sophomore season in the NBA, and he puts that pressure on himself, and we do the same. We want him to be great, not just good.
So, Jamal, when you look back on that series with the Sixers, I mean, there were moments there where a lot of people felt like you had the Sixers on the ropes, and game six, you go into halftime, it's a coin flip game, and then they get the better of you in that third quarter of game six and end up closing it out in Toronto. When you look back, what was the difference in that series from your perspective?
I thought the difference was some of the details, that we didn't perform when we needed to. I thought the third quarter in our game six was really bad for us. You know, losing by 20 points on a series closer, isn't acceptable. So we just got to go back to the lab and continue to get better and find ways that find players that we could count on night in and night out that will refuse saying no for an answer. You know, finding a way to win is what I mean. And that's what we're doing. That's what we're at the combine this week in Chicago. And, we're going to start working out some draft picks. We have the 30th pick this year in the first round. And we're going to continue to, obviously it's free agency comes right after that. And we're going to continue to improve.
With Jamal McLaurin, we talk about the culture of the Raptors and how it was established when Masai got there, and this sense from the outside that, everyone's on the same page, that you almost have to be, constantly thinking about winning and ruthless in order to get there. Is that the truth that, Masai and what he has put forth in terms of his mandate permeates the whole organization and everyone's kind of on the same page, that it's anything short of winning a championship again would be almost considered a bust, or a failure?
I think that's fair to say. I don't want to put words in Masai's mouth, but you heard him say over 40 times in his exit press conference that winning is a priority here with Toronto, and, that's what we expect. We're not going to make excuses. We're not going to talk about our age or the referees or any of that. We're just going to continue to play and find a way to win. That's what we're doing. We really value the offseason. We value on getting talent in here and coaching them when they're here. So it'll be a very interesting summer, and I'm sure you'll see a better, harder, faster playing team in the fall.
Well, we look forward to that. He is Jamal McLaurin, Raptors assistant coach, VP and senior advisor for the Scarborough Shooting Stars of the Canadian Elite Basketball League, soon to be the home of J. Cole, and as he mentioned, playing their first game next week in Guelph. So good luck with that, Jamal. Good luck with the combine, the whole offseason. We really appreciate you taking time for us. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you, man. Thank you for the opportunity. Call anytime.
You got it. There he is, Jamal McLaurin. Good Toronto guy. and NBA All-Star, of course. And he's been with the Raptors for a long time, you know, in different roles. But, yeah, he and it's interesting, you know, the culture of things, Masai, the approach, and no excuses, just go out there and you got to improve. And, you know, the evolution of the sport, and Scotty Barnes really is going to define it. Mm-hmm. Like the idea of him in his second year, I think he played a ton of minutes. There's a reason he won the Rookie of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
He was playing a ton of minutes, and he was playing in every scenario, and he was so – it was such an integral role he played in a playoff team and them getting back to where they believe they belong. And I think he just explodes that much more next year. I mean, if he keeps working on his shot and his offensive instincts and really putting that more into play, I think we could see him being – you know, a guy that is a legitimate all-star next year. Forget Rookie of the Year type conversations. Like legitimate all-star or on the radar anyway.
I like the thing Jamal said there about he's got things we can't teach, you know, the tenacity and I would argue the savvy. And I would argue, since we're talking about, you know, sports in this town and what's missing, he's got killer instinct, man. He's not afraid, man. He's not afraid of anybody out there. And I think he's got all the components of a winning player, not just a really good player.
I think the injury he played through is that's a cutting edge, right? Like that's a killer instinct. Because in the NBA, man, there's a lot of players who are just I'm not willing to play through anything.
You're right.
Anything. It doesn't matter that it's the playoffs. Like they're just not willing to play through it. And he had a legitimate ankle sprain. He was walking around in a walking boot.
Yep.
Like he was legitimately out and they were down 3-0 in the series, and he still played.
Amazing.
And he played well. Like, that, to me, was a testament of where his head is at.
That's a great point. If he would have had his people saying, hey, father, you're dead. You know, no one's ever come back from 3-0 down. What's the point of playing? Well, and Nick Nurse, I think, had a great point. He needs the games. You know, like, everybody on this team, if we're developing what we hope we're developing, which is a team that can win in the playoffs – he needs playoff games. And guess what? He got a couple more, and they were important.
That's right. Absolutely. And look at Boston last night, right? Like, Marcus Smart, that dude is a stud. Like, there's a reason defensive player of the year, but he puts up numbers. He plays with energy. But that was a performance last night. And when you look at Boston, like, Tatum is a superstar. He is, and he has developed into that. And Brown's a good player. You know, they've got Williams, a good player. They got Smart as a stud. But that's a team that's just built on defense, versatility, a culture. Like, they get coached into the ground, and they demand performances out of everybody. Like, that's not a big three in Boston. You know, that's not LeBron's Miami Heat. That's not KD joining the Warriors. And I think they could absolutely win an NBA championship. Like, I could totally see that being the case.
Well, your point's great because, I don't know, people have called this year, like, the official death of the super team. With the Lakers flagging and the Clippers never having Kawhi and Paul George healthy, and you saw what went on in Brooklyn, but what did the Celtics do to turn their year around? Played team basketball. It wasn't take turns basketball. It was we got to move the ball, guys. And once Ime Udoka, the new coach there, was able to convince Tatum and Brown, and it was Marcus Smart really who was the guy saying it. Like when you got that dogged defensive player of the year type guy saying, guys, we got to be less selfish. It resonates, man. It really
does. Yeah. And it's paid off and it's 1-1 in that series. Bobby Marks, more on that in the next hour. Pierre LeBrun out in the Battle of Alberta. He'll join us from Calgary. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right. So Tiger's imploding a little bit. He's now 5-over.
Oh, boy.
And the cut line's at 4-over. So at one point, he was 3-over, and he's obviously dropped a couple of shots here, and he's made the turn. I think he's through 12, and he's going to have to grind if he wants to make the cut, but he's miles away from Will Zalatoris, who is currently in the lead. He's 3-under on the day, and he's 7-under on the tournament, and this is a guy who just shows up. He's like the new Koepka. He doesn't close like Koepka, but he shows up for the majors, man, and he performs.
Amazing.
He performs. Yeah. His putting stroke is awful. Whiskey mitts, as O would call him. But I guess it's working for him right now.
Well, as Faxon said, he led the field in putting in round one. So he's for an ugly stroke, it's working.
Oh, it's jagged, man. Someone sent me a video of it yesterday. Like, it was a stop and start at the top. Like, it's the yips, like borderline yips, but I guess if they roll in, then they roll in. So Will Zalatoris, he's hitting his shots, and he's such a great ball striker. Like tee to green, he puts it close. If you're rolling four and five putters, you should be able to make those. You know, you have to if you're a tour pro and you want to win a major. So we'll track that into the final hour, see if Tiger can make the cut. Pierre LeBrun still to come. Bobby Marks of ESPN still to come. And the Jays back in action tonight. We'll tee that up as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.